Tarantulas. You probably think they're big and scary. They're actually pretty harmless. And I learned about their history as pets in America, and I want you to watch as well. It's a documentary called Spiders Will Eat Your Face. You can find it on Amazon Prime, Instant Watch, and Amazon.com. And I promise, they won't eat your face.
What's going on? What's happening? What are you telling me?
I would like to extend to you an invitation to the pants party.
It's time for the Pop Culture Connoisseurs, a gal and a gay podcast with Kitty.
One time, she punched me in the face. It was awesome.
And Mick.
He's the gay of my dreams.
And they have this book, this burn book, where they write mean things about all the girls in our grade.
What does it say about me?
You're not in it.
Those bitches.
All right, welcome to episode 130 of Pop Culture Connoisseurs, a gal and a gay. I am Mick.
And I'm Kitty. Thanks for joining us. We're really excited for this episode.
We have been working on this episode
for a while.
A couple months.
Yeah, and our schedules finally allowed for us to chat with a friend of ours from way back in the day, mm-hmm. who is doing something entirely new with his life, so it's pretty interesting.
As we learned, he is not... We've seen him on several shows like American Crime Story, mm-hmm. The People versus O.J. Simpson, things like that. And I said, oh, he's an extra in a couple of the things. No, we learned those are background actors.
Background act, and it's something with the union rules or the mm-hmm. SAG rules that, no, they're not extras, they're background actors. So, there you go. Learn something new every day.
Well, and a lot of times these background actors... Mm-hmm. then become main actors and lead actors
right.
Later on in their career.
Most of the time.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So anyway, we're talking with J.B. Bowersfeld. He is a friend of ours that we've known for a while. Mm-hmm. He used to be a colleague of ours back in the day in the TV world, TV news world, I should say.
Yeah, he was a sports director.
He was a sports director, and he just a couple years ago decided he wanted to chase his dreams about becoming an actor, and so he moved to L.A., and so we talked to him about that process and what mm-hmm. his life in L.A. and all his successes so far.
Yeah, and so just to give you a little bit of background before we get to his interview, again, he was in American Crime Story, The People versus O.J., and he's also, you might recognize him, and we'll post mm-hmm. stuff on our Facebook page, he did a Southwest commercial, mm-hmm. he did a KFC commercial, mm-hmm. But he's also done a lot of other things. His latest was a movie called Gentleman's Fury. It opened back in May. He played Rudy. Then he was a narrator for it's called Assistance at 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Go-Go Boy Interrupted. He plays hot guy number 4 at We Need to Talk. It was a short back in 2016. He played a bar patron. So he is just the beginning of his career.
Yeah.
And I'm excited.
I'm excited
again,
for him. Yeah.
We've known JB for a few years.
Yeah.
And he has it.
Right, I agree. He has it,
yeah.
Definitely.
And he has a great outlook.
Yeah, and he's a really nice guy, just a really all-around great guy, so I'm very happy for him. So, without further ado, listen to our interview with J.B. Bowersfeld. Here you go.
All right, joining us now, J.B. Bowersfeld, all the way from L.A. J.B., thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day watching Game of Thrones, right? To talk to this?
I tried to watch it last night, but I had a long, long weekend and an early wake-up call on Sunday, so I really only got about 20 minutes in, and then rewatched the entire episode this morning. So, yeah, it's been a busy day. I also went to the gym, so, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you for fitting us in.
Well, Jay...
challenge.
Well, I guess we should kind of run a disclaimer a little bit. So obviously we just didn't pluck JB out of nowhere and contact him. We know JB
mm-hmm.
From all of our time in Topeka, Kansas.
Yep, that's right.
In the news business.
In the news biz.
JB was...
I spent a lot longer in Topeka than you guys did.
That's true, you did. You did. But
well,
you're from Topeka.
Yeah, you grew up in Topeka.
So... It's understandable.
Yeah.
JB was a competitor of ours.
Yes, he worked at a different station than us, and he was mm-hmm. a sports director there. And
he's also really good at dodgeball.
Yeah.
But I'm also pretty good at dodgeball, dodging the balls that JB was trying to murder me with.
I forgot all about that.
Oh, I'll never forget that, never.
I think, actually, the Sunflower State Games took dodgeball out of the lineup because people didn't want to play WIBW. And it wasn't because it was, like, they're afraid of us. They're like, no, we can't play those jerks. Okay, we're done with them. We are setting up their players.
Wow, my complaint works. I can't believe it. Sorry, JB, that I got you got dodgeball ripped. No, it was actually a lot of fun.
Yeah,
and
it was.
JB was captain of his team. I was the captain.
What were
of our
we called?
Team. I can't remember.
Something 27 News in it.
Something
so,
27
yeah,
News.
Anyway.
But it was fun. But we had a lot of...
It was the Survivors, a nice playoff of the popular CBS show.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
We should have been the biggest losers from NBC.
We should have been.
Anyway, back to JB. Okay, JB, so tell the listeners a little bit about from your journey from sports director in Topeka to an actor in LA. How does this happen?
Oh, goodness gracious. I'll try and give you the Cliff Notes version. Or what's like the modern day variety of Cliff Notes?
Wikipedia?
I don't
know.
Is that how kids cheat on their tests now?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I really don't know, honestly.
So yeah, I've already failed at giving you the short version. Anyway, so I was at WIBW for 10 years, and about 9 years in, I had kind of come to the conclusion that the next chapter of my life needed to be either out of sports broadcasting or out of Topeka, or, a combination of the two. And I was trying to start thinking about, what other fields could I go into, and also, where would I live? And always in the back of my head, I had this little acting bug. I was in school plays in like kindergarten, in middle school, in high school, all the way up through that. But I hadn't actually acted in about 15 years since my senior year. We did a production of Little Shop of Horrors. And that's actually the only production I did at my high school.
I did that play in high school as well. So,
yes,
it was a lot of fun. Yep.
Do you remember Hugh Playcat?
I was actually stage manager. So at that point I wasn't doing stage stuff, but it was still a lot of fun production. It was my senior year as well. So yeah.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. I'm guessing it wasn't also 1999.
It was probably 2001. No, it was 2000. So close.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You guys, where did you go to high school, Kat?
I'm from Seguin, Texas. So nowhere near Topeka, Kansas.
Okay.
So. But about the same
time. I thought you were a Texas gal. But,
yeah.
So anyway, it was always kind of in the back of my head, somewhere, in there. And then for one reason or another, I was talking to some friends and this just was there. And, who knows? I started going to a regular karaoke night at this local dive bar called the Booby Trap. No, not a strip club. Just a dive bar. Just getting back up on stage and singing karaoke in front of a dozen and a half people was such a blast for me. And, that kind of fanned the flames on that spark a little bit. And I had a buddy from middle school who was out doing Broadway and had a lot of success. His name was Jeff Crady. I called him, talked to him on the phone for half an hour, bounced some things off of him, talked to another guy who has become a really good friend of mine named Sean Broyles. He was a Kansas City newscaster for a few years, also started out as a sportscaster before he went to news, and then had become a writer, stand-up, and actor out here. And it had some success with that. And so after, probably a year, really, of bouncing back and forth on whether this was a journey that I really wanted to take, I finally said, yeah, you know what? I'm going to do it. And interesting story on the way that it actually came about. So I told my parents at dinner on a Sunday night, because we always had Sunday night, big Sundays at my dad's house, and I told them, hey, I'm going to leave the TV business and I'm going to be an actor. I don't know if I'm going to go to Chicago, New York, LA, exactly where yet, but I had made up my mind that I was going to do it. And my mom had always been my biggest fan, number one supporter when I was playing sports. But dad was a little bit more wary about it. He's kind of like, oh my God, you built this career. What are you doing? And for the first couple of days, he was like sending me these articles like, hey, how hard is it to be an actor in LA? You know, and I finally, I was like, after a couple of days, I was like, Dad, this isn't what I need from you. And since then, he's been, you know, on board. But serendipity kind of came in. I was going to work through the end of the summer at WIBW and then leave before the next, you know, fall football season. But happenstance came about, and they wanted to get rid of me about the same time that I wanted to get rid of them. So it was really kind of a mutual thing. Oh, okay. And it freed up my schedule for the entire summer. So I was able to do a couple of Civic Theater productions at Topeka Civic Theater. So I did Mary Poppins and I did Catch Me If You Can, both musicals. Great. And I fell back in love with acting and with the theater. And I was like, yes, it was a great way to kind of dip my toe in that water before I really jumped into the deep end. And I said, okay, I'm going to do it. Absolutely now. For sure. 100%. So I put my house on the market and filled up my 2006 Nissan Altima with whatever I could fit in it, and whatever else wouldn't fit in the storage unit or my parents' basement, I sold. And I moved out here in October 2014, so almost 3 years now. Been trying to hack it in Hollywood.
Wow. Did you have the dog at the time?
I did. So my car was, it looked like I was smuggling drugs in the back seat. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to have to unload this trunk because the cop's not going to believe that I'll just have all this stuff in the car. So the car was totally filled to the ceiling, except for the driver's seat, obviously, because safety first, and the floorboard on the passenger seat, because that's where my Australian cattle dog Pepper was. Mm-hmm. And she went on this adventure with me and kept me great company until about 14, 15 months ago. At age 13, she finally said, okay, Dad, I think you're on your feet here. Mm. And, you know, she asked permission, and I granted that it was time for her to cross the rainbow bridge. But she was such a great friend to have along the journey with me for the first couple of years.
That had to be pretty important, though, to be able to have Pepper there with you. I mean, you didn't have your family. Right, you were out there by yourself.
Exactly. And any of my friends who are listening to this can attest that Pepper was no stranger at the television station or at a house party here or there. So, yeah, she was kind of like my little shadow. And
I think that's how we met Pepper once or twice at a house party. So,
Right. So, she was integral. And it was really rough the first 9 months, you know, because you're in a new city and it's tough anywhere. And I've got this dog who's used to a backyard of her own.
Yeah.
In this tiny little studio apartment, and I'm doing extra work on set, and it could be an 8-hour day, it could be a 12-hour day. So she was amazing. She trained herself not to drink water until I got home, so she wouldn't have accidents.
Wow.
Smartest dog ever.
Smart.
Right.
Yeah.
So once my sublease was up, I was able to get into a house that had like a fenced-in backyard and a doggy door into my room directly. So last year and change, she lived in like high style. There were neighbors that loved her and other dogs for her to ignore. So it was perfect.
Oh, that's sweet. So
that's awesome. Yeah.
So how big was it a big difference going from a place like Topeka, Kansas or the Midwest to LA? I mean, I imagine that's a bit of a different lifestyle or culture, I guess you could say.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And, you know, I had never even visited Los Angeles before I made the decision. Like, honestly, when I moved, it was October, so I didn't really want to move to Chicago or to New York. And I was kind of saying, okay, I'm going to give it 6-7 months to test the city, make sure I don't just hate my life. And I didn't think it'd be fair to either Chicago or New York to move there during a brutal winter. and just the city, just based on half a year. So I moved to L.A., and the living situation worked out because my buddy Sean Broyles had a sublet that he was able to lend me at a good price, which was crucial because I still hadn't sold my house back in Kansas. So that was like maybe the craziest part, was just being somewhere new and experiencing something like that. I actually live in Burbank still to this day, but that's where I moved to, which I don't know if anybody's familiar with Los Angeles. There's a ton of studios around LA, and a bunch of them are in Burbank. There's Disney, there's Warner Brothers, Cartoon Network, Nickelodeon. Half of the Universal lot is in Burbank, so it's a great area for an actor. If you want to be near the lots. But like Los Angeles itself, it was a little different than I expected. Because you think big cities, you think population density, tall buildings. But LA, is obviously so famous for the car, and the reason for that is because of the sprawl. The city is just so big from one side to the other that took some getting used to. It's basically like if you're going to get in your car and go to, say, the Fox studio, during morning rush hour or even close to it, it'd be like driving to Liberty, Missouri, just for the morning because it's going to take you an hour to get there. So, yeah, you kind of got to get used to having a bigger footprint. But I was ready for a little bit faster pace. And, we're all living in Trump's America now, but I'm kind of in my happy little leftist bubble, utopia of Los Angeles. So, that part I can't complain about. But yeah, there were some adjustments.
Well, because
overall,
JB,
it's been great.
You were a celebrity in Topeka, and then you moved to LA to be a nobody. Like, that's kind of backwards,
right.
Right.
Obviously, we use that term very loosely, but recognizable if nothing else.
In Topeka, JB, you are people on TV are celebrities.
Well, I mean, Mitch was a celebrity as well in Topeka.
There you go.
So,
There you go.
It's crazy. The small towns, they watch. You are a celebrity.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, but that's funny that you're in LA and the place where celebrities are. So,
yeah.
And you're on your way. You're on your way.
Like the real celebrities. I remember. A couple months in, I was at Whole Foods because, L.A., and Drew Barrymore's at the deli counter next to me.
Wow.
Lunch. it's just funny. I remember also, the Valley. I use quotation fingers that you can't see just now. The Valley is kind of the adult entertainment industry's Hollywood. And at my grocery store that was, half a block away from my first apartment, I ran into a guy and I'm like, why have I seen that face before? It's like, he wasn't like an A-list or anything. And then it clicked. I was like, oh, wait, that dude's a porn star.
Did you get his autograph?
No, I believe. I did not. I was afraid to shake his hand. I went to him. I was like, "Hey, man, like your work. Like your work." it's just crazy. You never know who you're gonna run into at any given day or week or time. A buddy I do improv with works for Andy Dick. So Andy Dick was hanging out in the parking lot before one of our improv shows. It's like. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Late at night, early in the morning, hanging out in a parking lot.
Right. It was like a 10 p.m. show, just in a random parking lot in Los Feliz. I had another friend that worked at this famous rock bar called the Rainbow, and we were gonna hang out after she got off work. And I walk on the patio, and speaking of adult film stars, Ron Jeremy just kicking it out there, looking kind of sad. But that's the most surreal part, and. We're used to interviewing, you in the news side, famous politicians or people who will come through town. For me, it's, athletes, and I don't ever bat an eye about that.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of have a new normal when you're in L.A. As far as, who might just be walking down the street, on a Tuesday afternoon.
Okay, so... I, like a lot of people, are a little skeezed out, a little creeped out by spiders. I mean, they have a bad reputation. They're a little scary, a little creepy. But you know what? They do a lot of good for the environment. And they're actually, most of them are pretty harmless, especially tarantulas. You know, they're the biggest and scariest of the spiders out there looking, I should say. But they're pretty docile and people keep them as pets. And you know what? There's a long history of people keeping them as pets in America. I mean, it goes back hundreds of years. So you can learn more about tarantulas, what they're like, and their history as pets in America by watching the really fun documentary called Spiders Will Eat Your Face. It's done in stop motion animation and it's done with some really creative things and it's very informative, very enjoyable. So highly recommend you check it out. You can watch it on Amazon.com, Amazon Prime, which you can watch for free if you are a Prime member, and Amazon Instant Watch.
You've worked with some celebrities. I mean, I remember one of the first times we recognized you in a TV show that we didn't know you were in was People vs. OJ.
Yeah.
Sarah Paulson.
Sterling K. Brown.
Sterling K. Brown.
Yeah.
What was that like and how...
Yeah, Cordy B. Vance. All three of them won Emmys on that show. Give me a break.
I know.
It was a great...
Yeah, I cut off your question, Mr. Apologist.
Show, that's okay. So what is it like when you're working with some of these celebrities? Like, are there rules for... Because you were an extra on that one, right? Are there rules for the extras not to interact with the actors? It probably depends.
There are no like hard and fast written rules. There are some actors who are notoriously like difficult. Like they'll give they call us background actors. Thank you very much.
Okay,
a technical term. Yeah, like on commercials, they're allowed to call you extras, but on movies and television, based on the contract, they have to call you background. They're not allowed to call you extras. Just one of those weird things in the contract.
Interesting.
But anyway, it kind of differs. And you kind of got to just realize who it is. Like, nobody's going up to Travolta and being like, hey, John, what's going on, man? But I can't remember the gentleman's name off the top of my head. He was Angel... And he was in, he had a show Bones.
Oh, David Boreanaz.
Yeah.
Yeah, David Boreanaz.
Yeah, yes. He has an interesting reputation in the background world. I don't know exactly what sparked it. You know, I'm not going to feed into rumors.
Right.
But I've had some friends work that show, and they will tell you, they'll say, don't make eye contact with David.
Mm.
Wow. It's interesting. Wow.
Right. Like, don't say anything to him. And if you're craft services, don't say anything. Don't even make eye contact with them. Like, for every one of those, there's 20 who are super cool. Like, Sarah Paulson, during that process was of shooting People vs. OJ, was also working not only on American Crime Story, which is the series, that, you know, of People vs. OJ. She's also doing American Horror Story. So she's like shooting two roles in a day. She's just all these lines and all this stuff going on in her head. So she had to be so intense. And you just kind of knew, like, she was in the zone. You didn't mess with Sarah.
Yeah.
Like, until she finished her coverage. And then it was like, it was kind of like after Thanksgiving and you undo the belt buckle, you know, and you're like,
gotcha.
Undo the button on the jeans. And it's like, she's like, all right, let's go. Let's have a blast now. I'm making TV. It was like, somebody let the air out of the balloon, and she's like, but like, Courtney B. Vance played Johnny Cochran, and one of the guys who was a stand-in on the show would have these like 5-minute parties during our lunch breaks, and Courtney B. Vance came and judged like the fake mustache competition or whatever, and they all had like a lightsaber fight with like inflatable lightsabers. So he was super cool. He even took a picture of me and the other assistant district attorneys on the show and sent it to us. So
that's really nice.
I actually he's married to Angela Bassett.
Yes.
Yeah, their kid actually takes tennis lessons from one of the guys I worked with over at the Burbank Tennis Center, which was with my side job for the first couple of years I was here. So it's like small world. And then Sterling K. Brown, I just would be remiss to not say that guy is one of the most genuine people that I have met, especially in a situation like as famous as he's become.
Yeah.
You know, obviously with This Is Us, it just took off and is a huge success now. You know, he won the Emmy on that show, but like so laid back, so nice. He asked us our names, and like a lot of times with extra or background work, you're on set one day and then, you know, you're gone and you're on another that we come in and they bring me and a couple other guys in for this scene in the boardroom. He's like, oh, hey, how's it going? I'm Sterling. And you know, I didn't really know him at that point in time. You know, people were so they hadn't come out, obviously, this is before This Is Us. He'd been in some things, but wasn't really a quote-unquote A-lister or big-name actor. So, super down-to-earth, and he's like, hey, you know, how you doing? I'm Sterling. I'm JB, and this is Brad. And the next day, we come back, and he's like, oh, hey, JB, how's it going? I'm like, oh, do you remember my name? And we would chat. His wife was 9 months pregnant when we started and had the baby while he was on set or one day, and like he had to rush to the hospital. So it was like, I don't know if he was actually on set, but while we were shooting, during the process of shooting. And so it's like, this guy has so much going on in his life between the show and his family. Like, for him to take the time, you know, between takes just to BS with a handful of, you know, nobodies, so to speak, it's like, yeah, that's really cool. And so that experience was awesome. You know, you've got a master class every day on set when you're rolling. John Singleton directed me. You know, Ryan Murphy. Obviously, and then Anthony Hemingway, who's done a ton of television shows, was one of the other directors. And so, like, those guys giving direction and watching, you know, obviously the three we mentioned who won Emmys on the show, but, you know, John Travolta and Cuba Gooding Jr. and Nathan Lane, one of my favorites of all time, just was amazing.
So what is the audition process like to be a background actor for a show like that? Do you meet with just a casting director, or does Ryan Murphy really have a say in background actors? I mean, you were pretty prominent. It wasn't like you were in the way, way background. You were on the prosecution's team.
Right. So for that, it was different than most times. You know, most times it's kind of like, I would go through Central Casting, is this company. You know, you've heard the term probably straight out of Central Casting. It's like, really is, you know, a thing. They, if a production needs something for the next day, they'll be like, okay, we need 15 Caucasian men, 15 Caucasian women, between, you know, late 20s and late 40s, professional look. And we need 12 African American men and women, and it's like they order it up, and they'll put out a call on their line or on their Facebook page, and you know, you just email them in and send them a picture of yourself. You have to be registered with these guys, but so that's like a normal day. But for this show, it was a little bit different because they had people that were going to work so many days, so they wanted people with A, a specific look, and B, that they knew weren't going to be complete a-holes. So I was booked just kind of as a regular, you know, office lawyer guy one day, and they take your look, and it's basically, you know, okay, we see this guy on camera, he looks sharp, or whatever it is that they want. With, you know, they want A, B, or C, and they say, okay, he's going to be on camera a lot. Let's do that. Let's have him. And so it's really kind of you know, luck of the draw. You got to be there on the right day and have the right look. And yeah, it was very interesting. And I was told by the director of photography on the show that Ryan Murphy said that I had an uncanny resemblance to his father. And so I did a little research, and he actually, rumor has it, he had a tough childhood and a poor relationship with his father. So maybe a little bit worried. I was like, is that a good thing? So, yeah.
Can I wear glasses? Can I,
kind of like, right. Like, should I go give him a hug? I don't know. Like, tell him it's going to be okay. I'm proud of you, son. But I didn't do that because, you know, Ryan Murphy's one of the busiest guys in Hollywood. He didn't need to waste his time. But yeah, like I said, Anthony Hemingway was one of the other directors, and he was super cool. Like, to all the background actors, I saw him on set a couple months after we finished OJ. I was like playing a bartender on a show, and he like came up and he gave me a big big hug, and he's like, hey, man, how's it going? Good to see you. And he was telling me about the dailies, and he got a chance to see one of the episodes. It was all cut together, and so that was really cool, you know, having more than just the single day there, like being like a part of the team. You know, you really felt like that on that show.
That's so cool. So you've also done a couple of really nationwide commercials. So, like, what's the what is the commercial audition process like compared to something
right,
like
well,
that?
Well, that's like a legitimate audition.
Yeah.
So for both the KC and the Southwest spot, you know, I went in. You know, typical casting call. You look around the room and you see 15, 25 guys who look just like you. And you're like, well, this should be interesting. And on both occasions, I went into the room and didn't feel super confident about my read the first time. You know, they had me do it a couple of times. And then, you know, got the call back and went back a couple of days later. And when you go back the second time, you know, there's the casting director and the casting assistant who saw you the first time, but then there's also folks from the agency. And so with commercials, it's, you know, a little different than television. In television, your director, your screenwriter are kind of the top two, and they are really in charge of what's going down on set. With commercials, so yeah, that was with television. And with commercials, it's, you know, you get your director, and then, you know, the ad agency is kind of above the director, and then the client, you know, the one who's paying the bills, is there on set too. So, you know, you've got the director of the commercial, the casting director who brought you in and saw you the first time, then you have agency and client in there as well. So there's a lot of people to impress, and, you know, for one reason or another, you know, you either have the right look or you did something funny that they liked, and it just worked out really well that that I was able to get on board with both of those.
With the KFC one, with the audition process, did you dress up like Colonel Sanders just to audition?
Well, I did not. What's funny is that, like, probably 3 months prior to that audition, I had like an interesting facial hair thing going on, like with a mustache. I think he called it the Van Dyke. So I had like a mustache with kind of the twisty ends, and then the bottom part of the goatee that was kind of pointy, kind of like devilish. No, that had been shaved off because I'd gone through the audition process with Blue Man Group, and they made me shave to get painted up for that whole thing. But anyway, I went in because I knew I was going for the role of quarterback. So, you know, you do a couple push-ups, you try and get some blood going in the muscles, so you know, you look like a football player, and you wear a tight, form-fitting athletic shirt, and you hope that you are what they're looking for. Yeah. You know, you just kind of show them what you have. And I saw a great video with Bryan Cranston, and he talked about auditioning, and he said, you know, when I stopped trying to get jobs and just trying to go into the audition room and show them my take on a part or what I have to bring to a role, he said that he never worked more. And so that was kind of me with both these auditions. I looked at them and I said, okay, well, that was fun. Never hear from those guys again. And sure enough, they called me back.
Oh, that's great. And the KFC commercial, you got to work with Rob Vrigel, who is a Kansas City native.
Yes.
So did you get to talk to him very much or hang out with him at all, you know, chat with him?
I did. So those days were super full. They had Rob for 12 hours a day. And we shot four commercials over the course of 2 days.
Wow.
So like with Southwest, it was like a 14-hour day. We shot one commercial. So you can imagine how busy he was. But there was a little bit of a downtime in the first spot that aired where I take the bite out of the chicken. And I'm like, yes, we are a real team. where we get to chatting. I think I kind of broke the ice. I was like, hey, they gave me Alex Smith's number.
The Chiefs.
I said that, and we got to talk about, you know, Kansas City sports, and his wife's a Topeka native.
I didn't know that. That's,
you know,
cool.
Yeah, you know, I won't say we hit it off, but we certainly had common ground to talk about, and his journey into acting and to comedy was a little bit roundabout, kind of like mine. You know, he was a he was a pilot in the military, and decided, you know, hey, I don't want this life for the rest of forever. And so we talked about our non-traditional journeys, and he was great because he's like, well, you know, you're booking stuff right now, you're less than 2 years in, you're writing sketches, you're doing improv. He's like, you're doing all the right things, man. So just keep doing what you do, keep plugging away.
So let's talk about the improv. We were chatting earlier and I said, you know, it's super impressive and it seems really hard, but what's it like doing improv? And were you intimidated at first or anything? Like, it just seems like, you know, it just, for somebody on the outside, I would just be so horrified or to try it.
Or is that what all actors are
right,
supposed to do?
Right, is that just part of your improv training?
Well, a lot of actors are terrified of it.
Yeah.
For one reason or another, it's really exciting to me. I don't know. Part of it, I think, it's like you get a rush doing that. That I equate that's similar to sports because you don't know what's coming up next, and so it's like you can draw up a play in basketball, but if the defense does one thing, then you need to make an adjustment on the fly. And it's the same way in improv. You know, there's no script, so you may have an idea for a scene, and you know, you deliver the first couple of lines, but then your team partner makes a totally different move than you expected. Well, you better fly with that because, you know, one of the rules of improv, the first rule is like yes and. So you say yes to what your team partner said, and then you add information. So, you know, you're building this house brick by brick. Everybody brings a different brick to the table, and it's just an absolute joy when you can do it and it's done right. Now, we bombed on stage plenty. And I think it's something you need to do. You have to bomb to realize how good it feels to have it really go well. But it was something I was really looking forward to. And actually, the first time I drove into Los Angeles was for my audition for the school at the Groundlings, which I know in the Midwest, a lot of people know the Chicago scene. Mm-hmm. It's like the Groundlings is kind of like the second city of LA, you know, really famous theater with a ton of huge names that have come out of it. So that was amazing to get into that school, you know, right away and start taking classes over there. And I've also taken classes over at IO West. It's been a joy to get to perform on stages like where you're like, oh man, Eric Stonestreet was on this stage last week. I watched him. You know, David Koechner was out here. So, you know, now I'm up here with my buddy and we're doing the same stupid stuff that they did. You know, just hoping that it's one tenth of as good as what they just did, you know?
That's so cool.
Okay, so you were a dancer in Hail Caesar? I have to ask you about this.
Oh, you guys pulled up the resume.
Oh, yeah. You did. Of course. You do our research.
Yeah.
like any good journalist. That's you right. Your
that's right.
Well, yeah, there's a reason why I'm asking you about this, but I want to find out.
And I know the reason.
I know, yeah.
Say it again, Mitch. I missed it.
No, it's like, there's a reason I bring up the Hail Caesar because of someone who was in the movie as well. I'm wondering if you worked with that person who's going to become Han Solo. In a few months. Did you work with him?
Well, yeah. Alden, is that his name? I can't remember off my head.
Alden.
Alden.
That's it.
That's right.
Aaron Wright.
Yeah.
Yes. He worked the same days as me, but like we didn't have any kind of interaction because, you know, we would like the scene where they're in the Brown Derby, and they kind of have a crane shot that pans up to the band. I was one of those folks twirling and spinning in front of the camera as that scene kind of set. So when he's talking to Tilda Swinton up on the balcony, that was kind of the main focus of the scene. And then we were down dancing on the ground level. So yeah, you could say I worked with him, but you would not be telling the whole truth.
Well, at least you'd be able to say you were on the same set
yes.
with him.
As young Han Solo.
So are you a Star Wars fan?
Right, and I passed both of the Coen brothers in the bathroom. So
there you go.
Good stories to tell in the future.
All right, so Star Wars fan?
Huge Star Wars fan. Dressed up actually got my picture in the newspaper in the Dubuque Capital Journal when I went to like episode 3's premiere with my toy lightsaber in my $4 costume.
Oh, okay, okay. So Return of the Jedi. Or no. Wait.
No.
So actual episode 3. Weren't you in TV at that time?
Revenge of the Sith.
Yes.
Weren't you in TV at the time?
No, I was in college.
Okay. All right.
Or maybe it was no.
Maybe
I'm
you were in TV.
Well, I was definitely in TV. Both assholes I'm talking to. Yes, I'm a little bit older, but JB's not far behind me. So
I'm not. I was in college actually. I take it back. I think it was episode 2. So Attack of the Clones, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, I would have been working at Topeka for episode 3. Also dressed up for that one. No, but I've been to 2 separate Star Wars conventions, one in Indianapolis and one in Anaheim. So yeah, I think I'm certifiable.
I think you're right.
Yeah. How many times have you watched behind the scenes video?
The most recent one that they just released?
Yeah.
Just once. I just caught it half an hour before we started chatting.
Excellent.
And now you wanted to. You said that stuff behind the scenes stuff kind of inspired you, correct? To
sure.
Yeah.
Right, so there was a point in time in my life when I was a broke photographer in Topeka, Kansas.
Been there.
And right. So it was interesting because like right out of college, I got married, and then right out of marriage, I got divorced. I'm living in this house that my ex-wife and I had purchased, and we were counting on like the dual income to be able to pay the mortgage.
Ew.
Well, I was so stubborn that I was like, you know what? I'm not selling this house. I'm going to find a way to make rent or make the mortgage every month. You know, I was taking home a cool $800. So that was easy peasy. So I shut off cable, and this is before like live streaming was really a thing, and so I had a handful of DVDs in my collection, and I just watched them over and over again. And my favorites were the behind the scenes for The Lord of the Rings. I always love like pulling that curtain back, you know, seeing what goes into making the movie. And for the Lord of the Rings movies and the extended editions, there was so much of that, you know, so much of that content. And I probably watched the behind the scenes on those. I mean, I'm not exaggerating, a dozen times on each of those 3 movies. And seeing the camaraderie of that cast and like what went into making that movie was such an inspiration to me. You know, obviously it didn't come to fruition until years later, because it just seems like a silly dream. Like, you know, that a 10-year-old is like, when I was 10, people asked me what I wanted to do, and I said, I want to be an NBA basketball player. Okay, yeah, sure thing. Look at your parents and then come back to me. when you realize when you're going to stop growing. And so it's like the same sort of thing. You know, a kid growing up in Kansas, it was like, right, you want to be an actor. Good luck with that sort of thing. But, like, that was maybe another building block as far as, you know, this is something that real people actually do. You know, and then, you know, seeing like the Rob Riggles and the Jason Segels, or Jason Sudeikis's of the world, and the Paul Rudds, you know, all those guys, as Eric, I think I mentioned Eric earlier, and it's like seeing those people have that success, you know, coming from Kansas City and the surrounding area, it was like, you know what, I think I can do this. So, the behind the scenes stuff, for someone who wanted to be an actor, at least somewhere in the back of his head, was totally an inspiration.
So do you have any advice for anyone who may be listening who is thinking, you know what, I would love to follow my dream and become an actor or a writer or director in Hollywood? I mean, what is your biggest advice for that?
Right. So whatever it is, it's like find a way to do it. For me, it was a huge step, you know. I had wanted to do like civic theater productions, but they rehearsed and did shows when I was working. So, you know, it just wasn't feasible. You know, so if it's as big a step as saying, you know what, if it's your passion, if it's your dream and it's what you want to do with your life, you know, then chase it. But there's just so many other things. Like, you want to do something that you can do in your spare time to try and do that as well. You know, I have a friend who's an ad guy in Kansas City and wrote one of the funniest mock-ups for a pilot that I've read since I've been out here. You know, just find a way to do that sort of thing. One of the things I heard out here when I moved and started taking improv classes was, you know, yeah, people go to film school to learn how to make films, but they also go to film school to be around other people who want to make films and who are passionate about that. It's kind of the same thing with the improv thing. You know, people gravitate toward those programs, one, to learn how to do that and to be funny and to learn that timing, but two, to also be around other people who have that same passion and that same skill set. You know, and just in the short time I've been here, to watch the people I've worked with have some of the successes that they've had, it's been amazing. And, you know, over the next 3, 5, 10 years, I fully expect these people to continue doing amazing and funny things. You know, maybe one of them will even give me a job along the way someday.
Excellent. All right.
Yeah, to actually answer the question, I would just say, like, surround yourself with people who want to do the same thing you want to do. There you go.
Yeah,
short answer.
That's great. That's good.
Because it is all about who you know and
It is.
And working off each other and
you know, just taking a chance, you know. You know. So
sometimes you need those life experiences to push you in the direction,
right.
Like you were mentioning how it worked out with your time
ending
in
Topeka.
Absolutely.
Actually, if I was 23 and moved out here, I would have floundered. I would have had no clue what to do with myself. I wouldn't have had the maturity to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at 33, you know, you have a certain sense of who you are as an adult, and, you know, I not starved or foreclosed on a house for 10 years, so I was like, okay, I can be a semi-responsible human being as an adult, so, you know, maybe it's time to make that journey, but timing is huge, too, but if that's what you're passionate about, you know, whatever it is, you know, chase it, do it,
so
make you happy.
What would be your dream job right now? Would it be something in TV? Would it be in film? What's like your goal right now of where you want to land next? Or eventually land?
Considering I haven't like booked a real job since the Southwest commercial, like right now my dream is to get a job that's going to pay the mortgage for the end of the year. Or the rent at least, because like rent in LA is not super cheap.
Yeah.
Just letting you guys know. Already. But hey, I made a choice. So, but like ultimate dream, I would love to do like a big budget action comedy, like in the vein of a Lethal Weapon sort of thing.
Okay.
I think that would just be an absolute blast, you know, because I love the physicality, I love the action, and I love the comedy. So something that would be a happy marriage of all of those things. And whatever genre, you know, whether it's episodic, you know, TV, Netflix, streaming, you know, film, even when I'm dreaming, I can't be that picky as to what it would be. But something along those lines. That's always been, I think that'd be really cool.
Do you have any interest in directing or writing or producing in the future?
Maybe. right now I write a lot. I've written a ton of stuff that hasn't, you know, and may never make it to any platform whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have an idea for a pilot for a television series, you know, based on my decade in the WIBW newsroom.
I'd watch that.
Which I've shown to a few friends. There were some characters in that newsroom.
Oh.
I'm sure you ran into more than a few over your years.
Yeah.
Writing, I think, is something that I would love to do. And I've directed some of the sketches that I have a buddy I do sketch and improv with. We have a 2-man team called My Dad's Chili. And, you know, with the journalism skills as a broadcast journalist, you know, you learn how to shoot everything, you know, how to edit everything. So I kind of directed, shot, and edited those myself. So, you know, the control freak that is somewhere inside of me
mm-hmm.
would prob- not in direct at some level too. But right now I'm really chasing the acting thing the hardest, but at the same time, you know, also not ruling anything out for sure.
All right, well, thank you so much for taking time today. We really appreciate it. Love hearing your story. Love hearing the stories.
Gosh, it was so fun.
Yeah, I know. We really appreciate it, GB, and good luck out there. We're really proud of you so far. So, and I think it's really cool that you're chasing your dreams. So it's very cool.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me. And, I really appreciate it. And I think of Kansas City and Northeast Kansas often and fondly. And, was just back there about a month ago for a wedding of some friends, and can't wait to get back there again.
Great. All right, JB, thanks.
All right.
And there you go. That's what it's like to be a working actor in LA at the moment. So, yeah. I mean, it was just really nice to talk to him and see and hear the process of it. You know, it's really interesting to hear. I always find it interesting to hear the audition process and really what it's like to be an actor, because I think a lot of people think it's super easy. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people realize the rejection you get a lot, or some of it's just really like a cattle call. Like, we're just looking for 30-year-old guys with brown hair, you know? So, yeah.
It's tough. I remember when I first started in TV, and one of my mentors said, look, when you're going in for jobs, and it's just like this in the acting world, from what we understand, is like, Julia Roberts isn't perfect for every role.
Right, exactly.
Tom Hanks isn't perfect for every role.
Yeah.
It's the luck of the draw sometimes.
Right, exactly.
And he's going to be perfect for whatever his next role is. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, he has such a great attitude.
He really
does.
It's
going to take him far. Obviously, he's talented, but attitude is everything.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, it's really already taken him so far, just in 2 years. You know, he's done a lot of work, you know, so that's that's really good for him, and I'm really happy for him. So anyway, look out for J.B. Bowersill, because I think you're going to be hearing a lot about him in the coming years, hopefully. So.
And we'll post some stuff about him on our Facebook page, so you guys can take a look at that.
Yeah.
All right, if you like listening to us and hearing about all the latest pop culture news, you should always follow us on social media. We are always there on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Just follow us on all those platforms at A Gal and A Gay.
And we would really love to hear from you. I mean, what are your favorite shows? What are your favorite movies? Any theories you want to share with us, especially about Game of Thrones, since that's going on right now? We're both obsessed with reading theories about Game of Thrones. So we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at agalandagay@gmail.com.
We also have a phone number, so you can call and leave us a voicemail, and we will play it on our podcast. Mm-hmm. That number, 816-237-8422. Again, 816-237-8422.
Yeah, and also if you guys tweet us or Facebook us or email us, we'll read that on the podcast too. So if you have any theories or anything like that, we would love to hear from you. And tell your friends about us. If you like listening to us, tell your friends about us. Share our podcast. They can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Podbean. So please share our podcast if you like listening. And go to Apple Podcasts and Podbean and rate us and leave us a review. We'd love to get some feedback and hear from you. So we would love that, please.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys.
All right. Bye-bye. Until next time.